Shadow people. Who are shadow people? Well, today we talk with author and historian Mike Ricksecker to talk about his latest book, A Walk in the Shadows, A Complete Guide to Shadow People. We'll find out, are shadow people real or just your imagination? Are they evil or miscast as just part of the spirit world? And of course, on Truth Be Told, are they extraterrestrials? Well, I'm Tony Sweet with Captain Ron for Truth Be Told, and we welcome to the Truth Be Told studios Mike Ricksecker, who you might have seen on the Animal Planet's The Haunted and Bio Channel's My Ghost Story. You might even heard him on Coast to Coast with George Norrie, or you might be a fan of his internet show, Ghost and Legends and the Paranormal Roads. So please welcome to Truth Be Told, Mike Ricksecker. Mike, how you doing?
Hey, doing pretty well. Appreciate it. And the latest thing is the Alaska Triangle on Travel Channel, which is airing on Sundays.
Wow. That is, congratulations. You're getting around.
Yeah, a little bit.
They used to say that about me, but that was a whole different
Hey, that's another story, different show, Tony, different show.
Well, we're excited to have you here because you have a brand new book out that we're going to talk about. And we've touched on shadow people before. And so, first of all, welcome to Truth Be Told. Second of all, I know we don't like to ask how you get started in your field, but I always find it fascinating.
But we're going to ask it anyway.
We're going to ask it anyway we're this time. Because, like, when I was a child, I did see ghosts. Were you enticed by seeing ghosts to get you into the field?
Well, I mean, that's really what the big draw was when I was younger. And it was a shadow person experience, which was my first major paranormal experience. And, you know, I mean, it's the beginning of the story sounds like everybody else as you wake up in the middle of the night and you see, you know, this shadow standing in the corner of the room. And, you know, at that age, you're not thinking shadow person or anything like that. I mean, I had no idea that these things existed or what they were called. I thought there was an intruder in my room and, you know, it was about to kill me. It's about as much as you think at that age. I have enough time to gasp in, then I'm a goner. It did approach my bed, and here's where the story gets a little bit different. It did approach my bed, and it leaned over. I'm trying to scream. My mouth opens up. Nothing's coming out. And it grabbed me by the wrists and crossed my arms across my body like that. And then it ran off down the hall. I found my voice, found my legs, ran off to my parents' bedroom, you know, telling them what happened. And, you know, they're trying to console me, call me down, telling me that they're being good parents and telling me that I just had a bad dream. But this is something that I was completely awake for. And, you know, that was the first major experience that I had when I was a kid that, you know, set me off down this path.
Now, just like aliens, you know, we touch on aliens here a lot on Truth Be Told, but there are many different types, you know, what is some of the,
grays or Nordics or whatever, reptilians, something.
Is there different types of shadow people?
Yeah. I spend the whole first part of my book talking about the different types of shadow people. So you have the humanoid figure, which is that first one that I experienced. You have the hat man, you have the hooded figure, you have the entity with red eyes, the mist, the wisps, the crawler, you know, all these different types.
Isn't there an old hag? Is that considered a shadow person?
The old hag syndrome is also considered a shadow person. I cover the old hag syndrome in the second part of my book. I have an entire section in there on sleep paralysis because that's something that a lot of people ask about, want more information about. And a lot of people believe that, shadow people are caused by old hag syndrome or by the sleep paralysis really. And that, the medical community will say that, well, you know, you're waking up from your sleep. Your body is still naturally paralyzed. Sleep paralysis is a natural process to keep your body from acting out your dreams. Hmm. And, you know, in this state, basically you're still paralyzed. Your body hasn't woken up. Your mind is starting to wake. And they say you're hallucinating these shadow people and that they're, you know, a part of your dream. The problem I have with that is it's multiple facets, but for one, we don't just dream about people. We have all kinds of different things going on in our dreams. You know, we could have cars, airplanes, you know, trees and flowers, motorcycles, all these different things going on in our dreams. I've had dreams of being on stage with Motley Crue, and I've never woken up to like an audience of 10,000 people in my room with the pyrotechnics going off and all of that stuff, which would be really cool. But you know, that's never happened. It's always a shadow person. So that's one of the major problems I have with it. Also, of all the times that I've seen shadow people, the only time that ever had anything to do related with sleep was that very first one. And I wasn't paralyzed during that. You know, my mouth open, my arms were being moved, my head turned to watch it go down the hall. And, you know, I've been collecting stories from people for, you know, a long, long time now, decades. And yeah, some of them, they do have the sleep paralysis going on, but in many of these cases, you know, they are not paralyzed. So I believe sleep paralysis, you know, that is certainly a, you know, a phenomenon related to the sleep state. And then shadow people, they are a supernatural phenomenon. Two separate things. They can happen at the same time, but definitely not always.
Hey, Mike, this has happened to you more than once? Like, I've never seen a shadow person. You've seen ghosts.
Ghosts, but never a shadow person.
Well, before, let's ask him the difference of those. But first, Mike, this seems like something that would happen to somebody once in a lifetime. But you say it's happened to you multiple times.
Yeah, and for a lot of people, it will be like a recurring thing, like at a particular house or what have you. Now, my first shadow person experience, it was really just a one-off. It wasn't a haunted house. It wasn't something that was recurring or anything like that. It just happened once, and that was it. But when I moved from the house that we were living at the time in Massachusetts to Ohio, the house that we moved into, I'm just unpacking boxes, putting things away, and I kept seeing someone peering in through my door. And I turn and look, and it would take off. And this happened several times, and it was just like a translucent, you know, shadow, you know, the size of a person. And I turn and look, take off. This happened several times, and so I ended up asking my mother about it, and it was just like, have you been seeing this, you know, going on within the house? And apparently she thought I was old enough then, you know, a little bit different than when I was younger. And she said, yeah, she actually had been seeing that within the house. So it was a nice piece of affirmation. Okay, I'm not crazy. But it wasn't doing anything nefarious. So I got a little playful with it and called it Tom, like, you know, peeping Tom, because it would peep in my room and then it would take off. And so this happened for like 3 or 4 months, you know, peek in the room, say hi Tom, and you take off. But yeah, after about 3 or 4 months of living there, it stopped happening. So I just kind of chalked it up to somebody or something that was there, was interested in us as a family, checked us out, deemed we were okay, and went about its business.
It's interesting that his mother saw the same thing. So right. Now, I mean, yeah. That's stronger to me. I was going to ask if you had something with your eyes checked or something. Maybe you were following lights or something. Seriously, could that, right. You know.
Yeah, because those black spots are, you know,
yeah,
how
I've
people.
Seen, like, sure. Stuff like, yeah. But it's something moving off my peripheral or whatever. I thought maybe that's what's going on. But if his mother also witnessed the same thing, well, then that takes that off the table. Interesting.
Right. And, you know, being a paranormal investigator, and we go out on these different investigations, we see all kinds of different things. And that's where I've seen the majority of the shadow people in my life has been on paranormal investigations. So, and one of the more prevalent ones was this past summer. And 5 of us saw the same thing of this rolling black smoke that actually morphed into the apparition of a little girl. And there's 5 of us standing there like, do you see her? Yeah, I see her. And, you know, it was pretty wild.
And one thing I know, especially Ron, we like to talk about scientific. Because seeing one in your room and maybe even in the field, but have you ever met with scientists or psychologists to talk about maybe how the two connect, so scientifically we have evidence?
And that becomes kind of the issue right there. That, you know, you look up what the scientists like to say about shadow people. They always relate it back to sleep paralysis and hallucinations. Okay. And so you kind of always hit that roadblock there. And it's like, look, you know, I've had all these experiences. Here's all these people that have had these experiences. You know, it's, we're not joking around.
Have you caught these on film ever? Because that would help too. Because I have seen some shows.
Yeah, I do have,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I have a really significant video clip at a school not too far from here. It was not necessarily an abandoned school, but it wasn't being used as a school anymore. The local archaeological society is now using the building. But while it was kind of transitioning there for several years, we'd go out there and investigate. And we would get this activity within the gym. It was kind of very playful. So the doors that led to the boys' locker room and then down to the basement, we'd always, you know, hear a lot of activity going on over there. We'd run over there and then nothing would happen. And all of a sudden we'd hear things going on over back by the bleachers. And so it's like back and forth like this. And so one of these nights, this sort of thing is happening. And back in the bleachers, I just have my camera panning around. And in the video footage, you see this shorter shadow person just kind of walking along right there, not too far from the door. And so we ended up doing a height comparison with my girlfriend, Shauna. We went back there and chalked it up to about the height of a 10 or 11 year old child. We came up to about her chest, you know, so it's the pretty compelling piece.
It's hard to catch those, but I have seen them on that one of those paranormal TV shows where they had a shadow person on the back of a plane and you could just barely see it. They're ducked away. It was pretty cool. I mean, obviously that could be faked or whatever, but it was an interesting piece of footage.
Yeah, and it's always hard to convince anybody, especially with all the, you know, video editing tools and Photoshop and all that stuff that we have these days.
Yeah.
You know, so it's hard. I mean, basically, you know, anybody that's a massive skeptic, I mean, they're going to be just polarized and, you know, they'll say, oh, you Photoshopped that or you edited the video.
Yeah.
Well, no, but.
Yeah, and you can't plan for this. Like, you don't know when they're coming, so it's hard to ever catch this. So it's a tough one to kind of prove. It's a tough case to make. But Tony, I think, was getting at, is there a difference? Like, what would be the difference between an apparition or a ghost and a shadow person?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, there are some shadow people or shadows that we see that are actually human spirits. And there's... It's a challenge to know which is which sometimes. You know, you might see a shadow and it's like, okay, was that a shadow person I saw or a human spirit? Because sometimes human spirits are trying to manifest into an apparition or what have you and can't quite make it. And they're only able to show up as this shadow. And I've heard quite a few stories about those sorts of shadows over the years. And, you know, it could be possible that many of the shadows that I've seen were some of those. But, you know, short of asking, hey, are you human, and getting a response, it's hard to know. But that story that I already talked about with the little girl that we had last year, you know, that was pretty much confirmation for me right there. I saw the rolling black smoke turn into a little girl. So obviously that one was a human spirit.
Pretty wild. No, that is pretty wild. And we have a few people in the chat room that are asking questions, and we'll get back to those in a minute. And thank you guys for tuning in. But... When, like I said, when I was a kid, like I said, I used to see an old man. I think it was just somebody had probably built the house, you know, because it was an old.
This was the ghost experience.
Ghost experience. But with the shadow people, are you finding can they most ghosts usually stay either with a particular person or a place? Shadow people the same thing? Is it mostly the person or is it the place that bring the shadow people?
It seems to be mostly the place. I mean, you do hear some stories of, you know, maybe shadows attaching themselves to somebody, but I've heard a lot of the opposite where they'll have a shadow person experience at the house when they end up moving. It doesn't follow them. Great example is these three sisters I was talking with last year. And they came up to me during a conference and they, when they were a little bit younger, had this hat man that would come into their bedroom, would always go up to the one girl's bed, stand at the edge of the bed and just kind of look down at her. And this would happen very frequently. The other two sisters would just stare at this phenomenon that was going on. The other ones in bed kind of frightened, looking up at the thing. Well, when they moved out of that house, the activity stopped happening. The hat man did not follow them. So it makes you wonder, does the shadow person consider this like its domicile, its place that it, you know, it lives and dwells, you know? Or if you start getting to some more of the deeper theories about what shadow people may be, are they perhaps assigned to the house to study, you know, the human activity that's at that particular location?
Well, the next people that move in, do they then see shadow people? Because that would
be and that's the big question. Right. Did they see it? You know, without going and asking them, you don't know.
Because I think sometimes some people are just not. It's kind of like when you go to a psychic, some people, they're completely shut down. They're oblivious to anything that a psychic says. Oh, you're, do you know a Betty? I don't know a Betty. And you had a net Betty. So a lot of times maybe when people move into a house after the fact, maybe they're just so oblivious, they don't believe in that stuff, that anything could go right pretty much in their face and they wouldn't even know it. So
that's actually a good question. Are people, do you have to be in tune to this? Like you said, right, Tony, people have like the psychic thing. They can kind of feel that mediumship as opposed to just anybody. Does shadow people tend to happen to people that are more into that kind of?
Well, you might be able to make a case for that. So Shauna, my girlfriend, and I will talk about different vibrational level and your own personal resonance, because I see more shadows than apparitions, and she'll see more apparitions than shadows. So we're kind of opposite on that spectrum. And, you know, it is interesting how some people who are just very closed off to it won't really have very many experiences. And I'm going to throw my dad under the bus here for a moment. Because he doesn't believe in all of this. But it's funny. He's like, yeah, I don't believe in all that. He'll read my stuff. And when I'm on TV, he'll watch that. But he's not into it at all. Doesn't believe in it. And then he'll say, but there was this one time. And he'll
launch
the
words out of my mouth, right, brother. It happens to me all the time. But they say, what's your show about? And I'll tell them. And they're like, oh, yeah, that's all nonsense. Well, you know, there was this one time. They all have, that's exactly how they say it. Well, there was this one time.
Right.
Well, that was my point earlier, though, that there is one time. Tony had one experience that he remembers seeing an apparition early in his life. So that's kind of interesting and incredible to me. I've had none. But then you and your girlfriend are both seeing stuff all the time that seems like, well, wait a minute. How come now it feels like they're attached to a person because you're seeing it all the time?
Yeah, I mean,
how do you account for that?
It's not the same phenomena that we're seeing all the time. Well, I guess actually she does see some things all the time. But, I mean, we're kind of looking for it, too. I mean, we're paranormal investigators.
Well, I guess that's
part of it,
sure.
We're looking for these sorts of things. And so we've kind of, we've really opened ourselves up to this type of phenomenon where, you know, people going about their daily lives and not being involved at all, you know, they might not be in a lot of situations where that could happen.
Do you see this in crowds? Are you in line at Starbucks and you see shadow people, or is it just pretty much when you're alone all the time? Because you're like, oh, I wish somebody saw it.
You know, there are times that, you know, there are other people around. I mean, it might not be like Starbucks or a grocery store or what have you. Although, you know, I've heard stories of the haunted Walmart and the haunted Toys R Us and things like that, where things are going on during the day while people were working there. So you do hear those stories. Off the top of my head, I can't think of one that I may have had like that, but it does happen to people.
Actually, Joseph in the chat room, this actually brings up a great question. And you may have answered a little bit, but, you know, ghosts, a lot of times lights flicker, TV static, you know, the radio station turns on or off by itself. With shadow people, do they experience the same thing, or is it just mostly visually seeing it?
With some shadow people, you may get some of that activity. Like when we experienced the crawler, and this was in an abandoned church out in the middle of nowhere. There is, literally, you know, we're out in the middle of Oklahoma off some dirt roads. There's nothing out there. And, our audio recorders and electronic equipment were picking up all kinds of static, like you would get if there was a large electrical surge. And this happened while we were experiencing what they call the crawler out there at that church. And we'd actually seen the thing slink in through one of the windows, and it was kind of circling us. It kicked a bottle that was on the floor, hit a railing, and, you know, all this other stuff that was going on. And that was one of the things was, you know, we're getting all this electric discharge from somewhere.
Hey, like a lot of these phenomena, do you find a historical record for it? Do you find like hundreds of years ago people describe sort of what you would describe as a shadow person?
The history of shadow people go all the way back into ancient times. If you look at some of the different ancient cultures, like the Egyptians, they talk about seven parts of the soul, and one of those is the shadow, and that shadow part of the soul is supposed to remain here on Earth. And so you see that in a lot of different cultures. There's some Native American cultures like the Choctaw that, again, kind of having different parts of the soul, and one of them is the part of the shadow. And then stuff like the old hag syndrome, You know, that comes down to, you know, the cultures will describe it in different ways, whether it's a witch, a demon, the dark oppressor, but it's all the same phenomena of waking up, seeing like this hag or this ghoul or this dark entity sitting on your chest, pressing you down. And this stuff's been reported for thousands of years from cultures from all over the world.
And I think also when we see as a child or even somebody that's just not interested in this at all, when you see something in the shadow, your fear takes over. It's like when a man walks into a room, woman walks in a room, they walk out and the police say, what are they wearing? What'd they look like? And you're like, I don't remember. And this, like I said, we've talked to many people about interdimensional, but how do we know that this is not extraterrestrial? How do we know that a shadow person is not an interdimensional being or extraterrestrial making
his I think presence? That's what he thinks it is.
Well, yeah.
But that's,
yeah, I mean,
that's,
I think a true shadow person is an interdimensional being. Right. There are some shadows that are human spirits, but I think a quote-unquote true shadow person is an interdimensional being. Yeah.
I mean, that would make sense more than just being a ghost, for sure.
Right. It's funny, you I think when I said old hag, you thought I was making a wife joke again or something.
Right.
That's actually a separate phenomenon.
I actually pulled some pictures of it.
Okay, good. Because that's
I
real.
I thought you were calling me an old hag. No. I'm like,
Because then there's the hat man. But are all these just fall under the umbrella of shadow people? Or is like the hat man have different distinguishing characteristics to that phenomenon?
Yeah, I mean, we call them all shadow people. But like I spend the whole, you know, part one of my book, you know, breaking down each kind. So as humans, we like to categorize things. It makes it a little simpler for us to digest information and to try to compartmentalize specific activity and things and beings and all that. And so, yeah, hat people are one of those kinds, but they do have different attributes than some of the other types of shadow people. You know, with the hat man, you know, obviously physical attributes where they come in wearing a hat, usually a fedora, sometimes a trench coat, sometimes it's a top hat, maybe a cape. I've heard one story of like an archer type hat, like something out of Robin Hood, and a couple with the big wide brim hats like Zorro. So, yeah, you hear these different styles. And so there's theories as to why that may be. But the big thing with the hat man, he seems to be, and a lot of these stories, what we would call an energy vampire. So he goes into a room, strikes fear into the person, and feeds off that fear. At least that's kind of the ongoing theory at the moment.
I mean, that makes sense.
Is there any thoughts to what else this could be? Could this be people turning their head too fast, or could it be anything else? Or you're pretty convinced it's an interdimensional?
Well, substance? I mean, with the ones that people see out of the corner of their eyes, you know, it's hard because, yeah, that could just be you turned your head too fast, or you're just not quite comprehending what was out of the corner of your eye. But when you see something dead on and it just moves like that, or you're, you know, like with me, I mean, the thing leaned over my bed, I'm staring into a face of nothing. You know, it's.
Well, see,
it's,
yeah, that's more of a real experience, because a lot of times the ones we've heard on this, you know, maybe after you've had 12 or 13 beers, Tony, sometimes these people, it is a glancing thing. I saw a shadow person. Did you interact with it? No, it was like I just turned and it was just ducked away. It's often like this. Aren't a lot of the accounts really fast? That's the ones I've
heard. Yeah, and that's like what I call the wisp type of shadow entity. They are very fast, but I've walked into a room before, and really the incident that makes me believe most of these are interdimensional beings was actually a wisp type entity, where I walked into the kitchen of this restaurant that we were investigating, and it just zoomed right across the room. And, you know, it wasn't, you know, out of the corner of my eye. It was dead on, but there it went. And it was fast.
You know? So it feels like you startled it. Like you came up on it and it ran away, sort of. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what I tell people all the time when people go down the route of, well, they're all evil. And it's like, no, there've been times I've scared it.
You know? Right.
So that's like the big example right there. So,
right. They do. There does seem to be this, I don't know, folklore. I don't know how to describe it, but there seems to be this thing around it that they're checking on you. They're watching us. I've often heard it described like that. Like they're,
well, that's like an alien
keeping an eye on us. Yeah. Well, that could be like even like the souls,
or
the
they're studying us, or
right,
maybe they're studying the human race, or yeah. And it very well could be. And that's kind of like one of the things people throw out there about extraterrestrials. You know, that they're coming down here and then they're studying us. Well, these These shadow people may be doing the same thing, or some of these shadow people may actually be extraterrestrials with that in mind to study the human race.
Before my mom passed away a little over a year ago, she used to talk about, and I've heard this through psychics, that she used to talk about, I would see something in the corner. I would see somebody walk into the door. She did. That's when I knew she was actually getting closer to death, because I've heard through psychics, you know, they come to greet you, to make the transition. Have you talked to either people that were dying or people that were family members that had somebody that died talking about shadow people visiting them before their death?
Not necessarily shadow people, but like my grandfather, when he was on his deathbed, you know, his grandfather basically walked into the room as a, you know, a spirit or a ghost or what have you. And he had actually never met his grandfather, but they just guy walks in and they're talking. And, you know, if he just, he knew right then and there, it was his grandfather. And I guess maybe from some parts of the conversation. So yeah, he was seeing a number of different things. My grandmother saw my grandfather, you know, before she passed. And, you know, that's one of the things when people ask me about, trying to pass on the ghosts and the spirits to the other side. It's like, well, you know, my grandfather, when he passed, he was visiting many people within the family. We all knew when he was around. So he'd visit us. Primarily, he visited my grandmother. And then after she passed, I haven't heard hide nor hair from either one of them. But it's kind of one of those, like, yeah, I wouldn't have wanted somebody to come along and pass him over to the other side. He was going around meeting people and her and all that. His goal was to stick around until she passed away.
Well, we're interviewing the amazing Mike Ricksecker and his new book, A Walk in the Shadows, A Complete Guide to Shadow People. But there is way more to Mike than just this brand new book that's out. He's been doing research and going into the field in paranormal world. And I know, Ron, you have some questions.
Yeah, well, I know. I mean, the shadow stuff's very interesting. Thought, you know, Mike's got a lot of stuff here. I thought we could have a chance to talk about some other things with him. You were talking about some of these scary places you investigated. I saw you went to the Shining Hotel. The film.
I covered that on my YouTube channel. I have not actually been there, but I was getting a lot of questions.
Right? Because, okay. Well,
yeah, Dr. Sleep was coming out at the time, and so a lot of people were requesting, hey, you should do a video on Stanley Hotel. So I covered the hotel, but I haven't actually been there yet.
Well, what'd you come up with?
A lot of the I got into the original story about Stephen King and what happened to him there with his nightmare, and kind of woke up and ended up started writing the story, sat down and looked out the window and started coming up with the story for The Shining. But that room that he had slept in, that was the one with, and I can't remember the housekeeper's name offhand, but where she had pretty much accidentally blown up the room and things like that. But between, you get the apparitions on the stairs and in the grand ballroom, down in the sub level. Yeah, there's the Stanley Hotel. So there's a lot of great hauntings that happen there. And when I put that video out, one of the tour guides at the Stanley Hotel reached out to me, and she appreciated the accuracy of some of the stories. So I was like, okay, good.
That's great. Good. So is that continuing there? Are they still having experiences there at the Stanley Hotel?
Yeah. A lot of people still experience things there. They do the ghost tours there, and they've actually put in a hedge maze in the front. And so it's still like really low, but they're growing it up to be a hedge maze, like out of the movie.
That's awesome. What a great idea that is.
Why do you think so many hotels keep spirits? Why don't they go haunt their homes where they used to live? And then, because it seems like every hotel has a ghost story.
Certainly a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great question, and a lot of these hotels that are haunted and historic, they've been around for a long time. They've seen some tragedy. People die at these hotels, and it's not always nice. It's not always just they're passing away in their sleep. Sometimes there's some nefarious things that go on. With the Stanley Hotel, it's the quartz deposits that it's basically embedded into a mountain, and so you have a lot of that energy coming up out of the rock to kind of help fuel those sorts of things. So, the history plays into a lot of these places. One that we go and we investigate a lot in our area, Mineral Springs Hotel in Alton, Illinois. It's basically, there's an open mineral spring. The original mineral spring is still down there in the bottom of the hotel. and you have all of this history that, you know, goes into like mobsters and things right. like that that were there, that, you know, there's all kinds of things that happen that that energy may just be attacked. Some of these ghosts may not realize that they're actually dead. So
they'd like to go on vacation.
have you looked at other good places? Like,
well, you know, and that's one of the guys, Dave Nunnally, who he runs one of the stores there at Mineral Springs, and he does the tours around there. There's a little girl that comes into the abandoned pool area all the time. And his theory is that, because there's no record of a little girl ever having like perished in the pool. There's a man who actually drowned in the pool once, but not a little girl. And having set up shop there for a long time now, you know, he's come to this idea that this little girl actually grew up, became an adult woman, and as her spirit form, you know, Mineral Springs was a place that she liked to go to. It's like a really fond memory of her childhood. So she'll go in there as her child form and try to enjoy the pool.
Hmm. Are there other good places? Like, have you happened to gone to the Queen Mary out here or anything else that's famous that has a lot of ghost tales?
Yeah, I haven't been out to the Queen Mary. I don't get out to California too often, unfortunately. I'd like to get out there a little bit more. But yeah, like Ohio State Reformatory, where Shawshank Redemption was filmed. It's mm-hmm. a very famous prison. Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum. So there's, yeah, a lot of the bigger ones out east here I've been to.
Why don't you give us your best firsthand ghost experience like that at one of these places?
Oh, what's a good one? So Stone Lion in Guthrie, Oklahoma, it's not, I wouldn't call it a big location like one of those prisons or what have you, but it's been on a number of the different television shows. And I call it my favorite haunted house. Because I mean, basically you walk up to this thing and say, oh yeah, that's a haunted house. It's in Guthrie, Oklahoma. And it actually has been in, what was the film? Was it Fingerprints, Handprints or something? It was with Lou Diamond Phillips. But in any case, the house had once been, it was in the family for a long time, spent some years as a mortuary. It's got a lot of cool things about it. She's running it now as a murder mystery bed and breakfast. And there's a stone embalming table in the foyer that actually was part of that mortuary back in the 1930s. And what's funny is she didn't know that's what it was when she first moved in. Whoever had lived there before her had it set up in the kitchen, and so she's baking and, you know, doing stuff like that on it. Her son comes home from school one day and says, mom, do you know what this house used to be? And then she looks down at the table and she's like, and she realizes what it was. So she doesn't live in the house anymore, but she has it set up there. So there's all these like cool things about the house. But this one particular night when we were investigating there, a number of different things happened. It just started off, you know, doing a basic electromagnetic field sweep of the house to see where there might be some hot spots. And, you know, because you want to know these things so that if you're investigating in an area and there's a lot of high EMF, and it's like, well, it's probably just the high EMF. So you want to find those spots. And so I'm doing this within the house, and I'm in the library. And actually, we never really got a whole lot of activity in the library whenever we investigated there. But this one moment, as I'm passing by the fireplace, all of a sudden my meter spikes up to red and I get like extremely lightheaded, and it feels like something just kind of like, you know, rolled right into me, just boom, slammed into me. And I felt like I was about to pass out. And so I kind of caught myself, was like, whoa. And then it passed. It was really quick. Hmm. But that was kind of like a prelude of things to come. So after we did our initial sweeps like that, you know, we're going to investigate now. So we're walking through the main entrance hall. There's also a bureau that's set up there. She places in front of these like large double doors so people don't go walking through those doors. And we notice that there's this drawer. One of the drawers is kind of opened a little bit, just kind of pushed out a little bit. Like, yeah, okay, that's interesting. We didn't really pay it much mind, just kind of noticed it as we're walking back into the first level, what she calls the parlor suite. It's one of the bedrooms for the bed and breakfast. And we're back there maybe a minute. And all of a sudden we heard this slam come out from the entrance hall. So we go out there and we notice that the drawer had closed shut. And so Johnny's getting out one of his meters. I start taking some photographs, and I got this really fantastic picture of a white wisp between Johnny and the Bureau. Well, wait, we're not done. So we're doing that for a few minutes and decide, you know, that parlor suite was really small for all of us. So we decide that we're going to split up into two groups. A few of the guys were going to go back into the parlor suite, and I was going to lead a small team upstairs. So I head up the stairs, get to the middle landing, and one of the girls starts coming up behind me, and between us on the wall, a framed photograph just, boom, crashed the stairs. Like, nobody touched it, nothing, just randomly, boom, crashed to the stairs. Yeah, that was a pretty wild night. And that was another night where later on, it was maybe a couple hours later, but when we went back upstairs, as we're coming up the stairs, we saw one of those wisp shadows just dart right through a doorway into one of the suites.
At this point, does this stuff scare you, or do you just startle? No, you're just like,
I was scared when I was a kid. Obviously, I was really young and you know, and all that. But, yeah, I mean, I'm more curious than anything. I see something like that, and I start running after it to find out, hey, yeah, who are you? I want to learn more about you, that sort of thing.
Awesome. I have to say, I had a similar situation in my house that I grew up in. After I got older, I stopped seeing the spirit, of course. You know, a lot of times we hit a certain age, we stop seeing the spirit. But we used to always hear, like, somebody walking or things upstairs. I don't know why it was always upstairs, but it was. And I remember hearing somebody walking, and I was home by myself, and I was like, okay. And I started slowly walking up the stairs thinking, is there somebody up there? And at the top of the stairs, we had a painting. And most paintings, when it falls, it would just slide straight down. This came this way. It came forward.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay.
I ran. I've never ran that hard. I ran down the stairs, ran outside. My mom and dad owned a grocery store down in my small town in Kansas. I ran all the way down there. I said, I'm not going home until you go with me. But wow. So, yeah. I
mean, you've had more than a couple.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. But
you've had a few there now.
Yeah.
But my
there was that one.
I say, yeah, right, exactly. Right. He's one of those guys. Right, but really, right. These other ones keep cropping up. Yeah.
But what verified it for me years later, and I've told this again many times, but years later, my nephew, who was at about the same age I was when I would see the ghost, was in my house with my sister-in-law. And he pointed over to a chair and said, Mama, look at that old man sitting in that chair. And she was like, what old man? He said, right there, that old man sitting in that chair. And she remembered me telling the story about it. And so she picked her son up and ran out the door. So, yeah, so that was my verification that I wasn't just seeing things as a child. But
right.
What about, like these old war like in a civil war, in these battles. Mm-hmm. Have you ever been to any of those battlefields, like Gettysburg or anything?
I've been to a lot of the battlefields. My Ghosts of Maryland book, I covered a number of the battlefields. And there's, in fact, there was so much Civil War history in the Ghosts of Maryland book that LSU covered it, the book, in their Civil War review.
Wow.
So yeah.
That's great.
I lived primarily in Frederick when I was there. Monocacy Battlefield was right at the south side of town. I've been to Gettysburg several times because that was like 45 minutes up north. But I was there as a kid as well. Antietam. So, yeah, quite a few of the battlefields out there. And there is a palpable energy out there. I can't say that I've ever seen a ghost out there. You know, it's just, you know, kind of quiet, eerie, sad, that sort of thing. But a lot of people have, you know, reportedly seen stuff like, you know, what they thought were recreations, and they'd go back to, you know, the visitor center and say, oh, that was a great recreation you guys were putting on today. And like, we didn't have anything going on. So, but, you know, there's a lot of those stories like that.
I think maybe as a child, when we were like in Tennessee or something, we may have stopped at a few battlefields. I don't remember.
And you saw some goats?
No, I never saw any goats, but I mean, at least I don't remember, but I would love to, truth be told, Captain Ron and I to go out some of these fields and see if we can. One thing that you just recently posted, and I know we've done many episodes on the triangle, the Devil's Triangle in the Gulf of Mexico, right?
Are you thinking of the Bermuda Triangle?
Bermuda Triangle.
The problem is
this is about the Alaskan Triangle.
Which is Bermuda, Miami.
Yeah, I'm like, okay. So, yeah. But you just did one on the Alaskan Triangle. I've never heard of that before.
Yeah.
Talk about that.
You do a lot about the Missouri Square, Tony.
Missouri Square, right. The four corners.
The Alaska Circle.
right.
Yeah, the Alaska Triangle. It's really interesting. It's like the phenomena of the Bermuda Triangle, but it's up in Alaska. And there's several locations like this in the world where there's all kinds of missing people, unexplained disappearances, crashes, strange activity. You know, everybody knows the stories from the Bermuda Triangle and the airplanes and the boats and all that.
Everybody but Tony, apparently.
Right.
But,
except for Tony.
That was the Kansas Turnpike, I think, right?
Right. Is there a Kansas Triangle too?
Probably.
So yeah, there's the Alaska Triangle.
That's a big triangle.
It is. They say it's about the size of Venezuela, but you know, Alaska's a huge state. People don't realize it's like almost three times the size of the state of Texas. It's absolutely huge up there. There's a lot of different disappearances. The first episode that we did was the missing Douglas airplane from 1950 that just disappeared without a trace. It wasn't like there was nasty weather or anything. It was a mostly sunny day and everything was fine up until they lost the radio transmission as they were basically crossing over from Alaska into Canada around the Snag area. Totally lost the airplane. They had 7,000 people out there covering hundreds of thousands of square miles in just absolutely nothing. A couple of interesting things about that. One, not long after, it was like a couple months later, there was another plane that crashed near Snag, smaller airplane. They found that one immediately, and the crew was okay. But still, this other bigger airplane that they couldn't find, no crash site, nothing. One of the interesting things that came out of this, while they were going through the search, they were picking up some interesting radio chatter. They couldn't quite make it all out. And then after like a couple days, this radio chatter subsided. And a lot of people speculate. It's one of the theories about what may have happened. I mean, there's UFO theories and things like that. But one of the theories is that the plane may have got caught in a portal or a vortex. It's one of the things that have reportedly happened down the Bermuda Triangle. And that radio chatter was actually coming out of another dimension that the plane had disappeared into. And that's actually one of the things that I cover a little bit in my Shadow Person book is the ability of sound to be able to traverse dimensions.
That's pretty crazy. You want to go for a flight to Alaska?
You want to go to a cruise to China?
Yep. No, I don't.
Here's a crazy one. I was stationed up there for 3 years when I was in the Air Force. This is 92 to 95. And it was the spring, my first spring that I was up there. And there's a plane taking off from the public airport. And as it's coming up over the city of Anchorage, just an engine fell right off of it and crashed into a supermarket parking lot. The plane turned around and landed safely. But there, could you imagine you're rolling out your groceries and all of a sudden,
right?
Boom.
I would have bought a lottery ticket that day because I would.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, that's pretty. I mean, like I said, I've never heard about that one before. So,
yeah, we are running out of time here. I've got a couple minutes left. I wanted to. Let's talk about the Stephen Avery case, because I know you covered that as well many times at least on your YouTube page. Do you want to talk about the Stephen Avery thing, where we're at with that now?
Yeah, I mean, that was the Making a Murderer case that, I mean, really, I just kind of stumbled into that. I had watched the
series. This seems outside your bailiwick, sort of, right?
Yeah, a little bit, but I was doing some, on my YouTube channel, some different reviews of, like, movies and shows and things like that, and I have a little bit of true crime on there because it kind of plays into the paranormal and some of the hauntings. And, Making a Murderer was true crime. And I was like, okay, I'm going to cover this and give a little review on it on my YouTube channel. And it just absolutely blew up. And, there was a massive conversation of things going on within the comments of that video. And people wanted, more updates and things like that. So I, for a couple of years there, I kind of ran with some periodic Stephen Avery videos. And I mean, to me, I think he's innocent. I don't think that he actually committed the Teresa Halbach murder. And I'm not saying he's the nicest guy in the world or anything like that, but I don't think he actually committed that crime. I think there was a lot of, manipulation and planting of evidence and things like that. And there's, I thought the series did a pretty good job of showing that, but outside of the series, if you go through a lot more of the information and dig deeper and deeper, you find even more of that type of stuff that went on.
Yeah, I watched it on Netflix.
Did you really?
Mm-hmm. And it was. I mean, just from being observer, it seemed like it was a setup. I mean, it really seemed like he didn't do it. But
like, did they ever get him off or not yet?
I don't know.
Not yet. They're still working on his case. You know, Kathleen Zellner, his new attorney, keeps.
She's got a lot of people off before.
Yeah, she has. She's done a really good job of, you know, uncovering those facts that have helped to show that these people really were innocent. And so she has a heck of a fight on her hands with the state of Wisconsin, but she's still at it. So we'll see where it goes.
Well, just like a couple minutes left. Tell us about anything coming up. I know you said you might be, again, on another television show, and then tell us about your YouTube channel.
Yeah, well, there's a few more episodes of Alaska Triangle that are going to be coming out. So the way Travel Channel has been doing it is it was originally supposed to be 10 one-hour episodes, and they've basically made it 5 2-hour episodes, which is kind of interesting. So for the next 3 weeks, we'll have some more of the Alaska Triangle episodes. So that's Sunday nights. Was it 9 o'clock Eastern? So that'd be 6 p.m. your time, I guess. Hmm. And I don't know if Travel Channel adjusts for the time zone. So there's that. YouTube channel, I just posted a video today before I got on with you guys about the Men in Black. But you know, doing the weekly, at least weekly, sometimes twice a week, videos out there, whether it's a you know, stuff like that, like Men in Black or ghost stories, paranormal investigation videos. They have a lot of shadow people videos out there. It's the Haunted Road Media YouTube channel. And then our live streams that we do on Tuesday nights, which is Edge of the Rabbit Hole and Beyond the Shadows. Hmm. We actually just recently moved that off of the Haunted Road Media YouTube channel and created its own Edge of the Rabbit Hole channel. So people can go there and catch those hour-long live streams.
That's cool. Great.
Basically, we're bringing people on, you know, like we're doing here, you know, and interviewing them. We had a couple of the Star Trek guys on this past week. So it's a little bit of a different flavor for us, but it was fun. It's a lot of fun.
It's fun to, you know, not stick just to one genre. Yeah. We like to mix it up a little bit.
But, absolutely.
Well, thank you, Mike. We really appreciate you being on the show, and we hope people tune into your live streams and support your book and your TV shows. We'd love to have you back soon and share some more ghost stories.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
You got it. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in. This is Tony Sweet with Captain Ron. For Truth Be Told, make sure you subscribe, share, and send some love our way. If you want to say anything negative, just say it about Captain Ron. All right. Take care, guys. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, Mike.